Good morning, everyone. A little bit about me to get started. My name's Naomi Moyer and I work as a teacher trainer for Oxford University Press. I specialise in the primary area, though I do dabble in other bits and pieces as well, but primary is my favourite segment, I think. Somewhat strange talk title. Educating a child is like building a house. Step one in this process of building a house, you need a plan. You need to have a clear plan. And this plan needs to be one that everybody is working from. Everybody meaning the parents, the teachers, the administrators, the ministries, and the students as well. If the parents and teachers are working from a different plan, we're not going to have a very solid house at the other end. So this is just to emphasize the importance of bringing parents into the picture and into the process of educating children in the classroom. So we need that plan to get started with. We also need outcomes and goals, short-term goals, medium-term goals, and long-term goals. And everybody needs to know where they need to be and when to help them along the process. We, of course, need a range of tools to build our house. And with all tools, we need to be able to choose the right tool for the right job. So we've got this great array of equipment that we can call on in the classroom when educating children, but we need to make sure that we're getting the right thing at the right time. And it's that changing and moving between tools to ensure that we're getting that rounded, well-structured house. And of course, tools need to be of a good quality. That's also very important. And tools also change throughout time. The tools that we use to build houses 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago are different to the tools that are used now. Some stay the same, but some have moved on and got better. And so we need to pick up the latest tools, if it's the best version of it. Keep some of the old and take on some of the new as well. The other thing when it comes to building this house, this child, is the different workmen or work people involved in that process. We need different types of skills to build a house. We need a plumber, we need an electrician, we need a carpenter, we need a decorator. And sometimes it's the teacher that is all of those things, the assessor, the monitor, the facilitator, etc. And sometimes we bring in different people. Again, the parent, the headmaster. All of these different roles are involved in building a house, in building a well-structured child. You can have a well-structured child. Not sure. Okay, so these are three key elements to get started. The plan, the tools, and the people involved. So we've got all of that. We're ready to actually get started with building our house. Where do we start? Foundations. Solid, firm, clear foundations. If we don't have good foundations, we're not going to go anywhere. It's not going to be a well-built house. One of the areas in particular that we need to make sure that we get good foundations is with reading. We need to make sure that our students are ready and able to deal with reading and writing. Now, there are two different approaches out there at the moment that focus on helping students with reading and writing. We have the phonic approach and look and say, two general approaches to developing reading. Now, there's pros and cons for both, and there's arguments out there about whether one is better than the other and we should use this and not use that, and this one works and that one doesn't. Personally, my feeling is that a combination is best. All things in moderation. It's the best way to go in life. So a little bit of look and say and a little bit of phonics, putting the two together. I want to focus particularly on phonics for a moment because I think that is very much part of the foundations of learning to read and to write. What is phonics? It's this idea of making that connection between letters and sounds. And it gives students the ability to unravel the code, the mystery of reading. So sounding out words, understanding what the letters represent, and working forward, building the word back together again. So a really important tool that we can give students to help them with reading in that foundation stage. So as the house is continually built, they've got that firm foundation there that they can use, they can access to help them move forward with their reading. What's the first step in phonics?
Initial sound.
Initial is a bit of a giveaway, really, isn't it? Yeah. What comes next?
Blends.
Any other suggestions?
We don't
know what CVCs. Can anyone help? What are CVCs?
Consonant, vowel, consonant.
Exactly. So initial sounds. CVCs.
Digraphs.
Do you know what this is?
Yes.
Are you telling us to be quiet, or are you giving us an example? Shh is an example of a digraph. Is an example of a digraph. No.
PH,
yes. Ch is an example of a digraph. Here is one suggested order for dealing and introducing phonics. Initial sounds, digraphs, CVCs, and then your blends. Now, sometimes CVCs come before digraphs. And there's discussion and debate about whether you should do one before the other. The reasoning that we've put digraphs first before CVCs is because there's not very many of them. And by having them, it will give students the tools that they need to be able to sound out all sorts of other words. Because if you teach them s, so everybody learns s, can I hear s?
S.
Excellent. And again? Great, and now I've taught you huh. Excellent. So, my students, you've learnt sir and what's this? Now, you're very clever adults. If you're 6 years old or 4 years old, what are you going to say? Sir, huh. So, if we're combining a phonic approach and a look and say approach, it's particularly important that they have all the tools to decode words so that they're not, when they see a word like this one, they're not saying, oh, suppose. They're saying shoes. So they have all the pieces of the puzzle to be able to sound out basic words very early on. And there aren't very many digraphs, so almost treat them like their own letters and then move on to whole words. It's just a much more efficient way of dealing with it, rather than going on to words and then going back to sounds again. It's sort of a bit messier. I focus now on digraphs, but I want to go back to initial sounds, and I want to do an example activity. So students have been introduced to a few sounds, and we're going to focus on Q-R-S-T-U. And I'm going to hand out some cards, and I'm going to make you volunteer, if that's possible. And all you have to do is hold your card facing you, and if you have a word, you will say the word. So you will just walk around going, sofa, 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 sofa. Okay? If you have a letter, you will just walk around with it facing you going, t, 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 until you find the word that matches your sound. So walks around until they hear sofa, 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 and then they get together. Okay? So, very easy. Choose card. Stand up if you're holding a card, and just in this aisle bit, hold it facing you, find your partner. Sofa, sofa, sofa. Okay, you found your partners?
Yeah.
All right, can you turn your pictures and words around? Is this one right? Are these right? Hold them up so everyone can see. Rest of the class, can you help, please? Is that good? What about these two here? Hold them up high. Can you hold these two up? And these two, are they right? Yeah, and the last two at the back there? Excellent. So that's an example of an activity that focuses on initial sounds. So you work through the introduction of it, using the flashcards, using audio, etc. And then you can revise and practice doing a simple activity like that. And it's a great thing to do at the start of a lesson, the next lesson, the end of a next lesson, just very quickly revising the sounds and giving students lots of practice and saying the sounds, hearing the sounds, and making those associations between what's written on the card, what it sounds like, and the vocabulary that goes with it. So very simple, no preparation, no fuss, straightforward. Let's focus now on digraphs. I'm going to show you something, but I'm only going to show you little bits of it. Look very closely and shout out what you see.
What colour? What colours?
Do you have a name?
Shoes.
Well done. Did you spot everything? This is Shirley. This is Shirley. So can you say hello to Shirley? Good. What's Shirley wearing? A skirt. What colour is the skirt? Excellent. And what else is she wearing? Let's go with a t-shirt. What colour is her t-shirt? It's a blue t-shirt. And what's this? It's a fish. And what colour is the fish? Excellent. And what's this?
Sheep.
What colour is that sheep? Okay. Now, and what's on her feet? What colour are they? They're red. They're better colours over there. Red shoes. All right. So can you all point to your shoes, please, and wiggle your toes a little bit? Excellent. Can you all touch your t-shirt? All right. And show me your fish. Excellent. And show me your sheep. I don't know, a woolly sheep. I'm always curious to see what comes out when we do that one. Show me your sheep. Okay. So you can see already that this is practicing a particular digraph. What digraph is it practicing? Shh. Okay, excellent. And we can do our little song. I'm going to play it. Just join in with the actions. Okay? And the last line, Shirley wants to play. Can I see play? Excellent. With me and you. All right. So, here we go. Just join in with the actions.
Very loud. Shirley's shoes are red, her t-shirt is blue. She's got a toy sheep and a toy fish too. The sheep is white, the fish is blue. Shirley wants to play with me and you.
Very impressive actions. Well done. But of course, being a primary session, it doesn't stop there. We need to go one step further. It's compulsory, really. I'm going to play it one more time, and I want to hear you joining in. Now, obviously, with a group of students, you might let them hear it a few more times before they have to join in. And one way of doing that would be to stick the relevant flashcards around the room, and they can point to them as they're listening, and then do the actions, and then join in. So you can do it in stages. But let's listen one more time and sing along. Nice loud voices, so you can drown me out. Shirley's shoes are red, her t-shirt is blue. She's got a toy sheep and a toy fish too. The sheep is white, the fish is blue. Shirley wants to play with me and you. Very nice. I'm very impressed. Well done. Well done. Chants and songs, etc., are a great way to build those foundations, to reinforce the foundations and help the students with their phonics so that they've really got that ingrained. So when it comes to dealing with text, they're ready and able to decode. Now, the follow-on task from this, as you can see here, is for the students to come up and find the sh sound in the text. So they're dealing with a whole text, which is a little bit the look and say idea, but they're focusing on and pulling out the particular shapes and sounds. And of course, if you're working with an IWB, they can come up and do that with the pens and draw all over it. Okay, step two, we have our foundations. They're there. Next point, we need to build that frame, to build that structure. We need to move upwards and onwards. Get the roof in, get the walls there, get that solid house in place. But what's really particularly important in this stage of the building process, also in the earlier stages, but particularly in this stage, because here we have our house, but if we don't support this framework, if we don't support what's happening, if we don't scaffold it, what's going to happen? Exactly. It's not going to last very long. And that might manifest itself in terms of motivation and interest in the language. They lose interest, they lose motivation, they lose confidence. Therefore not able to progress, and the whole thing collapses. It might be that it's just always too difficult for them. And this is something that I think is particularly important. The idea of going back and revising and doing things sometimes which are a little bit easy for them gives them that sense of confidence and satisfaction, which is that supporting process.
But it's not only about confidence and motivation, it's also about supporting the different skills that we need to teach. And in particular, I think writing is one of those skills where we sometimes don't support enough, and we leave them out there in the cold. You know, write a sentence, write a paragraph. Okay, and then they hand it in and we red pen it. Well, what have we given them to support them in that process of writing that sentence, of writing that paragraph? So what I want you to do for a moment now is think about writing and think about the sub-skills. What is involved in writing a sentence or a paragraph? What are all the bits that you need to be able to do in order to write a sentence or a paragraph? With a partner, quick brainstorm, how many things can you think of? An example might be punctuation. You need to know how to punctuate your paragraph to be able to write an effective paragraph. What else? What other sub-skills are involved? Okay. Shout out a few of your ideas. Brainstorming, so the note forming, the ideas gathering, etc. Anything else? Spelling, yes. Word order, etc. Goes on and on and on and on and on. Here are just a few. There's a lot involved in writing, an awful lot involved in writing. And just by throwing it out there and saying, write something, we're not supporting or scaffolding the students. So we need to help them in this process. And this could be focusing on the capital letters. So an activity that draws their attention to capital letters in a sentence. When do we use capitals? Why do we use capitals? Finding them and doing exercises with putting them back in, taking them out, etc. So that's at a basic level. Very simple activity, or it might go further up and it might be focusing on something like this, which is how to write a leaflet. So the structure, or what's involved in writing a leaflet. So the different things you need, the different kinds of language you use, the different structures involved. So there's lots of different support that we can provide. So rather than it just being write, taking them through the steps of writing, teaching them the sub-skills. So not testing, not product, but the process. The other area in terms of supporting and scaffolding is building the whole child. We're talking about the whole house. English language teaching, or being a teacher of children, is not just about language. It's not just about English. It is also very much about values, morals, behaviour. All of these things come into play when we're working with children. And so in terms of scaffolding them and supporting their learning and supporting their development, we do also need to focus on these things in the classroom. What can you see? Just look and think. Okay, with a partner, what did you see? Discuss. How many things can you come up with? Okay. How did you do? Very well. Excellent, of course. Now, obviously, with a group of students, I would get contributions, find out their ideas, etc. I'm not going to go through that process with you. But now that we have the poster up there, now that we've got your interest in the poster, grabbed your attention, we can focus on what the poster is telling us, what the poster is teaching us. And we can draw attention to various situations. So you might ask the students, can you find someone doing something good out in the street, in town? And they might come up and circle something. Can you tell me? Can you see someone doing something good? At the supermarket. Ah, opening the door. Very nice. Can we see somebody doing something not so good? Dropping the litter. Oh, terrible. So you can use the poster to draw attention to certain behaviours that you want to encourage. Now, I found that the poster makes it more realistic for students. Parents, teachers, adults talk at children about behaving well. Don't do this, don't do that, make sure you do this. And the students switch off their ears. You know, children always have selective hearing. I'm just not going to listen anymore. Yes, Mom. Yeah, and they're not really hearing what's being said to them because it's just more words. Tie your shoes, brush your teeth, get dressed, don't litter, don't do this, do that, la, 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 la. So having something more visual, although it's not going to make it perfect, it's not going to suddenly produce perfectly behaved children just because you have a poster that you can talk about, it is more concrete, it is more tangible for them. So when you're trying to talk about these sorts of things, you've got something to visually draw on and refer to, which makes it more memorable for the students and more realistic for the students. And now once you've worked with the poster, then you can use the poster, an actual poster. And there are different things you can do with it. So you can stick the poster on the wall and encourage the students to run and touch somebody doing something good. Run and touch somebody doing something bad. and then talk about what they're doing and why they're doing it, etc. Or you can use it electronically as well, on a board or a projector. You can then follow this up by doing, you can focus on language as well, so you can tie in the values work and the language work, so they're not separate issues. You can bring the language into it as well. So here's an example of this. If you look at the picture again, and just in a line on a piece of paper, write down the names of the people. Only do three or four, you don't have to do all of them. Just write down the names of the people that you can see. Don't write what they're doing, just their names. Okay, everybody got three or four names, at least in their heads or on a piece of paper? Look at the picture for 10 seconds. Remember, who is doing what? Who is doing what? So, who is pushing to the front? Mrs. Green? A couple of people agree. We'll have to have a look. Who is holding the door open?
Ed.
Oh, seems to be consensus there. Who is shouting and being rude? Not sure. Anyway, you get the idea, etc., etc. You can then come back to the picture and see how well they did with matching the names and the people. And obviously you're bringing in the present continuous there. So you're combining the focus on values with language, not separating them out, but putting them together towards scaffolding and supporting that child and building the whole child. So we have our foundations, we have our structure. What happens next? Decorating, thank you very much. We get decorating. And we need to put in our finishing touches. Now, with the finishing touches in the decorating process, it's the fiddly bits, it's the details, it's the doorknobs and the stair thing and the little bits and pieces that we need to focus on, the taps, all those little bits that really make a house a home, that make it personalised. So what we need to do is look at how we can help our students with these fiddly bits. And one area in particular that's quite fiddly is vocabulary. We focus very much with young learners on teaching them nouns and verbs and adjectives, and that's all nice and straightforward, and we can put the things on flashcards, and it's all very visual and easy. But of course, vocabulary doesn't end there. It's not all about nouns, verbs, and adjectives. There's a lot more to vocabulary. All of this kind of stuff that make English vocabulary complicated and difficult. And once we're getting into the upper primary years, the 10, 11, 12-year-olds, we need to start helping them more and more with these aspects, getting them ready for secondary learning, getting them ready for what's going to come next. And they already know their nouns and their verbs and their adjectives, so you need to go a step further. Let's focus on one particular fiddly bit, prefixes and suffixes. Here's an example of some pages from Family and Friends where they're working with prefixes, a couple of different exercises. They can work on this in the book, get that solid input, but then we want to play with it a little bit to really reinforce it for the students. So here's an example of an activity that will really reinforce these fiddly bits. Okay, so we have this. I'm going to do a fairly physical version of this, but then we can talk afterwards about less physical versions of it. But do be careful, okay? Because different classrooms, you can be more or less physical depending on where you're teaching. But we have un, in, and dis. I'm going to say a word. First person from each team have to stand in front of the right card. Okay, so the first person from each team. The first word is popular. Like. Now, sometimes I do that with three chairs, and they have to put their bottom on the correct chair. Another way of doing it is you can ask the students to take a piece of paper, divide it into three, and write one of these on each piece, and they hold up the correct one when you shout out the word. So everybody is playing at the same time. You could also do it so that you have, again, in teams, two people from the team have the three cards, and their team can shout out, "Dis, dis, dis," and they have to choose the one and hold it up, and then the next person from the team comes and takes their turn. So different ways of playing it, depending on your class size, your ability to move them around, fixed furniture or not fixed furniture, whether you're allowed to be physical or not in your classes, so you can vary the activity. And that's just one example. You can do different language points or different vocabulary areas. You can use it with younger students and just have animals, clothes, sports, so different topic areas. But that's a good way of making something that can be quite dry a little bit more interactive, a little bit more fun, and a little bit more physical, but still focusing on teaching those fiddly bits and getting them to work with it and play with it a little bit and make it their own. So, we have our foundations in place, sorted. We've built a nice firm structure that we've supported the whole way, so it hasn't fallen down. And we've added our own finishing touches, those details. So basically, all that we have to do now is invite the friends and family round and move in. Have a big barbecue. So we've finished our house. But what I want to do, because I think this is a really important part of working with children, is reflect back on what we've looked at today. And the first thing I want you to do is think back to the tool chest that I talked about at the beginning, the toolbox. What were the various tools that I used in this session today? What were the different things that as a trainer or as a teacher I have drawn on to work with to show you activities? So with a partner, think back over the tools. One tool, of course, is the IWB itself. What other tools have been used? Think back for a couple of minutes. Okay, so what were the various tools? Can you shout out? What have we done? TPR, so students' bodies, people in the room. Absolutely. What else? Cards. We've used the flashcards. The visual images. Posters. Audio, so the songs. The IWB. Is that pretty much everything I had on my list? Yeah, and the classroom. Maybe the three chairs at the front or the classroom space. So a range of tools in 45 minutes. You don't necessarily have to squeeze all of that into every 45-minute lesson you teach, but just ensuring a range and a variety so that you get the interaction and the variance in class. The other thing that I want you to do, which will be something that will be reflected on the poster that we're going to hand out as you leave, is this idea of thinking back what you saw, what you heard, what you said, and what you touched, bringing in that idea of the whole child. So, very quickly, what did you hear, see, touch, do in the session today? You've sort of started thinking about it with the tools already, but can anyone shout out anything in particular that they... So you heard and you spoke, okay? So speaking, we did a chant, what else? The words, you saw the posters, saw pictures. Touched the cards, held the cards, yeah? Making the link between hearing and seeing. Putting the two together. Yeah. Okay, so just a really good thing for teachers to do at the end of a lesson is to encourage the students to think back. What did you hear today? What did you see today? What did you touch today? What did you do today? Bringing in all of the senses and that visual, auditory, kinesthetic idea, the different learning styles of students. So making sure that they're getting a balance over the duration of the lesson. And it's just an early way of self-reflection. Older students are better at thinking back about what they did, but younger students sort of leave the classroom and go, oh, I played games. Well, we didn't do anything. Yeah. So encouraging them just to think about it for a moment and reflect on it in a child-friendly way is a starting point for that reflection process. What did I learn? What am I taking away from my lesson today? So as you go throughout the conference over the next day or two, you can keep thinking, what did I hear? What did I see? What did I do? What did I touch? What have I learnt? What's my takeaway from the session, from the day? So thank you very much for participating. Do feel free to follow us on Twitter, visit our blog, or come and find us on YouTube as well. And also come to the stand. Family Friends has a IWB component, and it's just in the process of being created. So it's its early demo version, but do come along and have a look at what that will look like soon. Thank you.